Does anyone here remember junior high school dances?
Mm-hmm.
I thought so. Say around the seventh grade. At least where I came from, the couples at the junior high dance would join together in the exact same stiff, wooden, fumbling dancing pose that seventh graders have been joining together in since the first fumbling adolescent boy figured out that he was culturally expected to say those painfully difficult words, "Would you like to dance?" If you have been to or remember a junior high dance or perhaps a bar mitzvah, you have probably witnessed and maybe in fact experienced the pose of which I speak. Since certainly in such contexts, most of the time same-gender dancing is rigidly looked down upon at junior high dances, it is a girl and a boy who, however, awkwardly try to strike this pose together. Now for me, in the 1980s, we had moved past the this pose. We were in the this pose, where the young woman reaches her arms up or down, as the case may be, to rest like lead weights on the shoulders of the poor, innocent young man. His tense shoulders are uncomfortable under the weight of those 1,000-pound bricks, and as she contemplates how heavy her hands must be, she tenses up to try to support them herself, until it in fact becomes immensely painful. Meanwhile, the eager, if terribly stressed out, young man has placed his hands gingerly on her waist in the safe zone. You know the safe zone, neither too low nor too high, in the safe zone. And he thinks he's doing all right, not messing up too badly while the smooth jams of NSYNC or maybe Stevie Wonder give him the courage to bring out the young romancer he always suspected himself to be. Eventually, perhaps, they relax just a little. She puts her head on his shoulder, and he thinks both that her head is very heavy and that he might get through this without some horribly embarrassing scene. When out of the darkness, with the speed and agility of a hawk seeking its prey, comes the most dreaded creature of all junior high dances, the chaperone. If this is a Catholic school, this chaperone is quite possibly a nun, and she knows her task. Up from the darkness, the crooning voice of Barry Manilow sliding under her clicking footsteps, she presses her fist between the two of them and shrieks at a seemingly non-human dog whistle decibel pitch the words that all junior high school Catholic students dread. "Leave room for the Holy Spirit." And just like that, our two nascent romancers are knocked out of their momentary reverie and back into the real world, where junior high dancing will be what it always should be: awkward. I don't know if you remember such experiences. I do, which is why I did not go to many Catholic school dances. I went to the public school dances. And my dateless, scrawny, seventh grade self thought it was really hilarious to personally sneak up on my more romantically successful friends right as they were about to lean in for a kiss, scream, "Leave room for the Holy Spirit!" in their ears as loud as I could, and run off cackling into the night. I was that kid in junior high, which might explain why I didn't have a date. "Leave room for the Holy Spirit," the chaperones and I would say, as if pressing two frail chests within an inch or two of one another might force a golden dove to pop up out of the middle and say, "Woo, it's a little tight in there." leave room for the Holy Spirit. As theologically questionable as that phrase certainly is, it was, I think, the junior high dance way of saying something everybody needs to hear, no matter what grade we're in. Namely, back it up, folks. Don't do anything you'll regret. And while I did torture my friends with that phrase in those years, and I meant it to be annoying rather than wise, there is something wise to be gleaned, even from a chaperone's harsh warning. While the delivery was no doubt harsh, the message itself may have been worth hearing. And more poetic people than junior high chaperones have found ways to say it better over the years. In the Khalil Gibran reading that I shared today, which is one that we often use at Unitarian Universalist weddings, by the way, in it he says, "Love one another, but make not a bond of love, and stand together, yet not too near together. For the pillars of the temple stand apart, and the oak tree and the cypress grow not in one another's shadow, and let there be spaces in your togetherness. Let the winds of heaven dance between you. Love one another, but make not a bond of love." It is as if the poet is trying to say to each of us, grown-ups though we may well be, the same thing the chaperone said at the dance: let there be spaces between you. Let there be room for something sacred that not even your closeness can erase. Let your life be shared in such a way that neither is ever completely effaced by the overhanging shadow of the other. Don't forget to stand together, but not so closely that you forget how to stand apart. I mean, sure, the chaperone was really just telling kids not to make out, to be too poetic about it. But the poet is telling us to remember who we are, and even when we come together, to maintain the integrity necessary to be ourselves, uniquely ourselves, even in the presence of another whom we treasure beyond words. Relationships, after all, are a lot like complex dances. And I think that statement applies to relationships far beyond your usual romantic attachment. The relationships we share with our parents, our children, the relationships we share with our friends, even the relationship we share with our congregation, every one of them is a complex dance, just as intricate, perhaps even more so than a romantic dance. They all have that same element of moving together and moving apart. It is a dance between partners as they move toward and away from one another in a constant spiral of separateness and togetherness. The dance of human relationship is a dance in which the partners can only come together for grand, sweeping gestures of breathtaking beauty if they have the grace, the skill, and the courage to back up and give each other some space in preparation for the next step. Any dance teacher will tell you that dancers cannot, if the dance is to be graceful, invade one another's space. They must be invited. If two are to dance as one, there must be spaces between them in which grace and beauty and strength reside. Spaces between them that allow for the integrity of the whole. Dance is all about moving together and then giving in without hesitation to the inevitable momentum that will always move us apart before we come back together again. Without the space, there is no dance. Without the apart, there is no together. Without the me, there is no we. And yet, the catch-22 in which so many of us find ourselves is the simple fact that we need one another to find out who we are individually in the first place. We need one another in order to know ourselves better. We need one another if we're to have the strength to dance at all. There are, I think, a great many of us who are fundamentally lonely. It's not space we need, but intimacy. Not distance we crave, but connection. We're lonely in neighborhoods where we don't know the people who live next to us. We're lonely in homes where folks don't talk to each other very much. We're lonely with our families far away and we're lonely in the midst of a crowd with people pushing by, each little more than utilitarian objects to be gotten around in milling crowds of the other. We're lonely in the midst of a population explosion, and the space between us might be the very last thing it feels as if we need. Some of us are lonely because we've lost our loved ones, because we haven't found someone to love us in the way we need to be loved. And yet space between us and our own longing, space between us and our own grief, space for ourselves may be exactly what we lonely people need. For many of us, we come to a place like this, this beloved community, this church of ours, not to find spaces, but to have our spaces filled in through being in close proximity to the hurts and hopes of our fellow travelers. We come here because we hunger and thirst for community, and awkward as it may be, we want to dance together. And yet we also know that beloved community is at its best when somehow we each manage to maintain our individual and separate perspectives on the whole. We are at our best not when we move in lockstep toward agreement or behave in precisely the same ways or all agree with the minister, but when we value precisely different things and agree to come together, each as different as we are alike, and move in relationship to one another, all the while maintaining the individual music of our separate lives. We are us, but we are also individuals. We are we, but I am also me. Too often in large groups, including religious bodies like ours, and in smaller groups like couples, there's a tendency among people to look toward their relationships, especially new ones, as the only key to their healing, the force which will single-handedly move them toward all they want themselves to be. We imagine that the other, be it our parents, our children, our lover, our friends, will somehow sweep in and make life rich with all the meaning and purpose and joy we have always wanted from it, or that they are the one single something that can fill our empty spaces and give us hope we couldn't find in the quietness of our own hearts. To some extent, this is true. Relationships do have a way of filling in our empty spaces, but they only work when some empty space remains. They only work when the closeness stops somewhere short of turning into rigidity. Psychiatrist Thomas Hora gives an interesting visual image of a relationship where each partner relies entirely on the other for the making of meaning in their lives. He says such a relationship is like two hands with interlocking fingers. The fingers on those hands can only weave in and around each other so much until all the space is gone and there's nowhere else to go except backward and no way to go backward except with friction, inching painfully until separation is achieved. The individual hands are free to move again. They have their own integrity back, but only after so much pain, and only after getting so close that forward momentum just isn't possible anymore. Hora does offer another image, however, an image of a relationship that might just nourish both souls. Imagine two hands pressed lightly together, palm to palm. Such intimacy, such closeness, and yet each hand, while remaining connected, is free to move, explore, and even change without breaking the bond with the other. Something else evocative about this gesture, isn't there? Like praying hands. Two hands that point not inward toward each other, but outward toward something larger, something other, something that exists beyond the relationship itself. A relationship that works, exists for more than its own self-perpetuation. It points to something else. Perhaps it is a shared goal or a shared devotion. Perhaps it's meaning that the two can create together, but the fingers don't point inward. They focus somewhere else entirely, towards something they hold in common, something that reaches beyond their own needs and toward the needs of others. Free and empty space. Always capable of changing into a new pattern or a new way of relating to one another. Sacred spaciousness. It is a gift we can give one another even as we fend off the loneliness of a lonely world by sharing our lives and our dreams. Sometimes it is absolutely magical to step away for a moment from the one with whom we've been dancing for so long and look with fresh eyes upon the person we've come to know so well, to let the space between us remind us of who we were before we were one another's people, to remember what it must have been like all that time ago when we first walked up to one another and somebody had the guts to ask for a dance. There are times in our lives when our eyes can be so misted over with familiarity, so blinded by closeness, that we can no longer see what makes a relationship worth loving in the first place. And only a little faith can clear our vision and give us back to ourselves so that we can be there for one another. Only a little faith can remind us, though we may be lonely, that there is such a thing as sacred spaciousness. Even in the midst of our isolation, sacred spaciousness that allows us to honor who we are. Is it room for the Holy Spirit that the poet and the psychiatrist speak about when they invite us into sacred spaciousness? Maybe. More likely, it's room for the self and room for the other. Room for all that is holy within us, among us, and beyond us to flourish as we are vibrant individuals connected and yet distinct, bound by a separateness that upholds rather than degrades the dance we do together. If there are spaces between us and trust, hopefully our dances will not be as awkward as those of seventh graders. But sometimes, more often than we might care to remember, they are just that, awkward, halting, nerve-wracking, and important. So maybe it won't kill us. In those moments when we start to fall whole cloth into the shadow of the one we love, as the weight of our head starts to sink into the willing shoulders of another, maybe it wouldn't kill us. As we start to wonder if we even remember who we are anymore, for someone to remind us to leave a little room for the Holy Spirit. May we find one another along the dances of our lives. May we have the courage to dance together even as we point to something quite beyond ourselves. And when we do join in dancing, may there be spaces between us, spaces for the spirit, spaces like those between the pillars of the temple, spaces for ourselves in which we might flourish and find all the meaning and hope we shall ever need.